Does your church need a backup organist? The Virtual Organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Either you abide by your religious convictions and you violate Obamacare, or you abide by Obamacare and you violate your religious convictions and free exercise of religion. There's no in between.
You talk about the purpose-driven life. You'd say in the book, it's not about you. Who is it about?
Well, it is all about God and His plan for us.
Just use plain, simple grammar. If the book is about you finding your purpose, the book is all about you.
The caffeine for the waiting Lutheran is the means of grace that keeps us awake and vigilant and filled with faith, waiting for Jesus.
Indiana truck driver, Columbus, etc.
These things always divide kind of into the black and white, don't they? Into the right and the left. Into the capitalism is nothing but pure greed and it's driven by greed. You either believe that's good or bad. And then on the other side, any concern about the social welfare of the American people must come from a bleeding liberal heart. And it simply isn't that simple for the Christian. It cannot be. Is there a moral case to be made for the free market? Welcome back to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. In the first half hour or so of the second hour on this Friday afternoon, we're going to be talking with Father Robert Sirico. He is author of a new book, Defending the Free Market, The Moral Case for a Free Economy, and he'll be making that moral case in about the next 40 minutes. And then we're going to play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week, as we usually do on Fridays. Four soundbites that we play for you. You listen, then you call, you email, you send us a tweet, or you visit our Facebook fan page, and you vote and you pick Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. 1-877-623-6943. Talk back at issuesetc.org or our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Soundbite of the week in the last half hour on this Friday afternoon. Father Robert Sirico is co-founder of the Acton Institute for the Study of Religion and Liberty, based in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and he's author of the new book, Defending the Free Market, The Moral Case for a Free Economy. Father Sirico, welcome to Issues Etc.
Good to be with you, Todd. Thanks.
Make the case that a free society and a free economy necessarily go together.
Well, think about who human beings are. You know, you could think that you could have a free society and not necessarily have a free economy, but human beings aren't just abstractions. We're not just spiritual ideas. We're embodied creatures. We live in a world of scarcity, and for us to really live out our vocation to till and tend the earth, to procreate, to use our talents for the glory of God, we need to use things. We need to use stuff. And that brings us into the whole world of economics, because what economics is basically is the allocation of scarce resources. And the principles that guide an economy are going to more or less tell us how free we are, what we can do with our lives, our ideas, our property, our ambitions.
So it sounds like what you're talking about there, at least philosophically, is recognizing natural law when it comes to freedom and the economy.
Precisely. And I think this is where the book I've written is distinct from a lot of other books in the what we might call the free market tradition, because many of them, which are very useful in scholarly texts, Milton Friedman, Friedrich Hayek, and others, really come at it from a utilitarian point of view. I'm coming at it from a more natural law point of view, from a really core ethical, moral point of view. Who is man? What do we acquire by the very nature of our existence? And what do we have the right to by the nature of our existence?
What is a free market? Describe that to us.
Well, I mean, there's no ideal. It's, I can't bring you to a place and say, that's it over there. What a market is really is a process of people bringing to relations with others, their ideas, their creativity, their needs, all on a kind of subjective level, so that when a person offers a product for sale, they really don't determine the price of the product. They, in a sense, don't even determine the product. I mean, they can make the product, but it doesn't become a real market transaction until someone on the other end says, yes, I need that. I will buy that, and I will buy it for that price. So it's reciprocal in that sense. And it describes this process of human action where people, I want to emphasize that what the market is subjective values that are brought to bear, not objective values, because the next question always is, well, doesn't that promote vice rather than virtue? And it does. That's why the market needs to be rooted in moral principles, ethical guidelines, a juridical framework.
How important is it to understand in some general sense? Obviously, not everyone will understand it in a biblical sense, but in a general sense, that man occupies this creation here on this side of the kingdom to come in a fallen state when it comes to our understanding of markets and how we interact with each other economically.
So your question is not in the biblical sense, because that's very easy to see.
Right.
But in the natural sense, how do people see that? We see it just by reflecting on ourselves. We see that even when we set our own ambitions and goals, whatever those values may be, we tend not to be able to achieve them. So in some sense, we recognize our fallenness, if you don't want to call it fallenness, our imperfection, our incapacity to do what we want to do, to achieve our highest ambitions. We find in our own lives, in our own experience, the will to do something, but the incapacity to do it. Of course, anyone who knows the scriptures knows that I'm kind of citing Paul's own experience when St. Paul says, the good that I would, I do not, and the evil that I would not, that I find myself doing. And this is a common human trait.
You say that when it comes to the markets, the economy, it's not all about dollars and cents. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean that many people in their economic lives bring with them, no, let me rephrase that, all people, even in their economic lives, bring with them their own set of priorities and values that sometimes eclipse the economic. So that, if I would put it crudely, how much are you going to give me for your daughter? You know, that there's something about that that exceeds the financial worth of a human being. Now, other people will disagree with that, and they'll say, well, okay, let me calculate that. I'll take $100,000. And that's a very sad reality in human history. But what I'm trying to show there is that the parent who goes to work to support their family is only instrumentally considering the economics. Their goal, their final goal, is the well-being of their family.
Let's talk about the malady, which is, I mean, it isn't one malady, but it's a complex of them. How is it that we have gotten a permanent underclass, in some cases, a welfare state, all of the things that I think people on both sides of the political divide recognize as a serious problem? How is it that has come about? Some people would say it's precisely through greed and capitalism.
Well, let me make three observations on this. First of all, from an economic point of view, I'm not sure that the underclass is always permanent. At least the individuals in it are not necessarily permanent. There are a lot of people who circulate through the economy that begin very poor and rise. And by the way, people who are at the top scales of the economy who fall, because, again, the economy is nothing more than people making these subjective decisions based on their needs. So people will rise and fall based on that. I do think, however, that when we build institutions, that there is some connection between the incentives created by a politicized state that will have its politicians offer various constituencies various kinds of subsidies. And by this, I don't mean, by the way, when we say welfare state, I don't mean just politicians offering to the poor benefits. I also mean politicians offering to businesses benefits. So that when we look at the welfare state, we need to look at it not only in its the realm of poverty and care for the poor, but also in the corporate dimensions of corporate capitalism. What I think a lot of people are really objecting to morally, certainly the Occupy Wall Street people, are objecting to corporate capitalism, not the kind of free trade that I'm speaking about, although I'm sure there'd be some disagreements there as well. So I think you also have this kind of institutional stasis that takes place when there are incentives in place, and then those incentives create a culture of dependency, where people find it inconceivable to think of life without heavy subsidies and intervention on their behalf by their politicians and bureaucrats.
So in that case, both the poor and the, we could say, the corporate rich, in your mind, make up that complex of the welfare state?
Yes. Yeah, because it's the same kind of thing. It's the same kind of dynamic that's at play. Of course, the poor, for believers, the poor have a priority to us because of their vulnerability, because, really, we encounter Jesus Christ in their distresses. So the question is, how do we meet their authentic needs? To do this, I think we need to be close to them. We need to build systems that are most proximate to the needs, so that we understand and know what the needs are, rather than these faraway bureaucracies that are animated more by political ambitions.
Father Robert Sirico is our guest. We're talking about the moral case for a free market on this Friday afternoon, December the 7th. When we come back, I wonder why it is some fiscal conservatives assume that recipients of business welfare would never abuse the system, but the poor welfare mom, she's always out to game it. We'll be right back.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The Virtual Organist Service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
Are you looking for Christ-centered, cross-focused Christmas gifts for your young children, grandchildren, or godchildren? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December is a children's book titled O Holy Night. This children's resource costs less than $2, plus shipping and handling. O Holy Night is published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or you can find out more at issuesetc.org. O Holy Night, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Well, Emily has completed 36 hours at Sylvan Learning Center. Her reading comprehension has improved almost 3 grade levels, and she's gone up more than a grade level in math. Not only have her academic skills improved, we've also noticed an increase in Emily's confidence. Sylvan Learning Center has 2 Metro East locations, Edwardsville 618-656-0500, Shiloh 618-628-0018, and one in Creve Coeur 314-997-3035. Sylvan Learning.
Mount Zion Lutheran Church in Greenfield, Wisconsin is a congregation of those gathered by the Spirit of the Lord around His saving word and sacraments. At the center of our life together is the divine service of the risen Jesus, the Lamb of God who was slain, who takes away the sin of the world. If you are in the Milwaukee area, we invite you to share with us in our Lord's gifts of forgiveness and new life. Services are on Saturdays at 5 p.m. and Sundays at 9 a.m. For more information, visit our website at MountZionGreenfield.org.
Glass and cloth, wood and stone will cry out to the next generation. This is what we have believed. This is Christ, our Savior, and yours.
From the moment of conception, you've got a human being, and that human being deserves legal protection. Unfortunately, that doesn't exist in the United States at the present time, and this is just damnable.
Our heroes from that age were probably not as heroic as, you know, we would have liked them to be. Well, guess what? That's the history of the church from St. Paul down to today.
There's a kind of a Mary and a Martha story happening with us. And Advent puts us where Jesus says the good part is.
In about 20 minutes, we'll play Issues Etc., soundbite of the week, four soundbites that we play for you, and it's a little game. All you do is listen, and then you give us a call, you send us an email, or you go to our Facebook fan page, and you vote for one of those soundbites to be Issues Etc., soundbite of the week, 1-877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, or our Facebook fan page where you could vote right now for Issues Etc., soundbite of the week, facebook.com/issuesetc. We're talking about the moral case for a free market. Father Robert Sirico is our guest. Father Sirico, why do you think it is, picking up on the idea that you introduced before the break, that the welfare state includes both the welfare poor and the welfare rich? Why do you think that some fiscal conservatives seem to assume that the recipients of business welfare don't abuse the system, but the poor welfare recipient, the poor welfare mother, so to speak, is always out to game the system?
Well, I'm not sure if, I don't know, what do we call them, conservatives, would always think, you know, somebody like Milton Friedman didn't. He understood this. Friedrich Hayek understood this. I wonder if at least a good part of it is a caricature of the conservative position, or a kind of sloppiness on the part of those defending corporate capitalism. Because what you have are people who are very successful, the kind of country club Republican types, who really aren't committed, I mean, principally, to a free market. They want a form of a free market, but they want regulations that protect their businesses, that inhibit trade. And the unionists do the same thing on the other side. They want trade barriers so that their markets, their institutions are protected from competition from developing countries. Or they want aid directed to nations that are friendly to their investments and their businesses, those kinds of things. And if there are people like that on the right, if you want to call it the right, because I don't see the whole world bifurcated in right and left. I think it's power and freedom that we want, or power and authority is even a better distinction. Power being coercive and authority being something that people buy into that's non-coercive.
Make the moral case, if you would, because I am gratified by your perspective on this. The moral case for private property, and even beyond that, just as a category, as private property as a good that permits and facilitates more freedom in society for the individual.
Well, let me give you let me take in a deep breath and run right through the whole thing. It begins with who human beings are as physical and transcendent or spiritual beings. That places us in the context of a material world, but not just in the way animals are bound to the world by their instincts, but by our minds, by our capacity to imagine and to aspire. And then in that combination of heaven and earth, if you will, we draw from nature things that are either undiscovered or not appreciated for their usefulness, and we make them useful through the use of our minds, through the use of our imagination and our transcendence. And then we place those at the service of others. That's called the market process in economic terms. I'm speaking two languages right now. I'm speaking the language of theology, but I'm also speaking the language of economics. When we place those things at the disposal of others for their service, they pay us because they'd rather have that object than, and we would rather have the money. And both people who encounter each other in that process are enriched by it. So there's no diminishment of people. The diminishment comes in when you have political or external forces that manipulate in one way or another the partners in that exchange. All of this, you see, a person who owns the means of production can only benefit themselves and their families and their employees by constantly being attentive to the needs of others. And then this way, we take the world, which is given as God's gift to the whole of humanity, and place it at the service of all of humanity without it being a communist or socialist economic system, through private property and through the ability and necessity of people to compete with each other, we find different ways of serving and enriching other people. And in the process of that, if there's a moral culture in place, then people can come to understand that our material existence is important, but it's not the whole thing. It's not the goal of our lives. And that's why I think it's so important to have that moral backdrop to the entire discussion of economics.
So can we explain then, if not historically, at least philosophically, the abject failure of socialist systems or communist systems, because the force of gravity, so to speak, in man's economic dealings simply won't bear that way of thinking about the means of production, about property, and about our fellow human beings?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it seems to me that socialism simply doesn't work. And the reason it doesn't work is that it disables people from calculating the real costs and benefits of things by eviscerating a price system. You know, what prices are is the price somebody pays for whatever they purchase based on what it's cost them to, you know, invest in it and develop it and transfer it and all the rest. When you eliminate the ability of people to set a price, a market price, you, in effect, dumb down society. You disable the intelligence of all these traders and all of these consumers from bringing to bear their knowledge on the system. And what socialism does, and this was something that was written about by an economist, Ludwig von Mises, in 1921, is that socialism can't compute. It can't give you factual data on things because it's obscured the whole pricing system. This is why you had these long queues in Central Europe or in Russia for an empty shelves, because they just didn't know how to produce things that people really wanted and needed. And in a real sense, the way I put it, let me put it in a bumper sticker sentence, socialism isn't wrong economics, it's anti-economics.
Is that why socialized medicine and the healthcare system is also bound to fail?
Precisely, precisely. In the beginning, it looks really great. Just like if I open a store that's run by the state, and I give you all these things that look cheap, and you can have them, but eventually you run out of things. Consider what would happen if we had our grocery stores run in the same way they want to run socialized medicine or whatever you want to call it, Obamacare or anything. If we go into a store now and we're told that it doesn't matter really what the cost of the things are, you just get what you want, you and I might not choose hamburger. We might choose some porterhouse steaks. And what ends up happening is there's no comparison shopping. There's no dependence on the reputation of different groups. I mean, we go into, even now, you go into a doctor's office, and who knows what the price of the checkup is, or the price of the medical procedure, or even the price of the drugs that the doctor's recommending. That's because of two things. One is government intervention through the Medicaid, Medicare system, and other various other interventions, and also through the regulation of the government that there be third-party payers, so that it drives up the price and disinterests us, disincentivizes us to know what the real costs are. It's interesting everybody's concerned about how high medical costs are going, but there are two fields of medical care that are dropping in price, and that is pet care, veterinary services, where you have higher technology and lower costs, and also LASIK surgery for the eyes, the laser. You remember how expensive LASIK surgery was when it first came out, but now it's relatively, you see sales, buy two eyes and get one eye free, that kind of thing. And why is that the case? Because neither of those are generally covered by insurance. There are some pet insurance companies, but they're not big factors yet in the market. And so that's to say they're paid directly by the consumer, creating a competitive market, and they're certainly not governed by the government. You can't get Medicaid for your dog.
Father Robert Sirico is our guest. We're talking about the moral case for the free market on this Friday afternoon, December the 7th. He's co-founder of the Acton Institute for the Study of Religion and Liberty, based in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He's author of the new book, Defending the Free Market, The Moral Case for a Free Economy. When we come back, just a few more minutes with him, then we're going to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. That means you need to get ready to listen to our four soundbites and then get ready to vote and pick Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. When we come back, the question then, really the probably the most pressing question that everyone has on their mind if you're paying attention to our conversation on the moral case for the free market is, what role does government play in the system of controls? There are internal controls that function in any market system. A free market has its own controls. It's why we call it a market. But government is there. Now, some might argue government has no role to play in controlling the market. Let the market run free. That's both impossible and impractical. We'll talk about the role that government has in the system of controls of a free market. Stay tuned.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and go to the Listen On Demand page. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. On Demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org, and click Listen On Demand.
We're doing our best to keep you informed on the current financial status of Issues Etc. We have 4 weeks left in 2012, and we're $50,000 short of making budget this year. Please consider making a year-end tax-deductible gift to support this worldwide outreach. You can make an online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also contribute by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. Send it to Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received him, who believed in his name, the Gospel of John says, he gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Do you have a student finishing up eighth grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Can a government outlaw pro-life teachings?
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Earlier this year, an anti-bullying law was enacted in Ontario, Canada. Unfortunately, the pro-abortion Minister of Education in Ontario, Laurel Broughton, is interpreting it more broadly than it was intended and declared that Catholic schools in Ontario could no longer teach that abortion is wrong. She said the anti-bullying law targets misogyny, a hatred of women, and that the pro-life position is misogynistic. Catholic leaders in the province condemned Broughton's proclamation and vowed to fight it vigorously. We pray they are successful and that pro-life advocates in America take notice of this alarming situation.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're making the moral case for the free market with Father Robert Sirico, author of the new book, Defending the Free Market, The Moral Case for a Free Economy. Father Sirico, let's talk about controls. There are obvious internal controls that any market, especially the free market, have to observe. They kind of function on their own, and I think that's part of the genius of it. But what about government? What role, if any, does government play in the system of controls on the free market?
I think the best role government can play is just setting up the basic legal infrastructure so that, for instance, of course, one of the first things is ensuring the right of private property. Somebody can't just take your property from you. The other thing is to ensure the right of contract so that when either in a complex contract that you stay in accord with what you've agreed to do, or even a simple contract, when I tell you I'm selling you orange juice, that I'm not really selling you orange looking water, so that there are those kinds of things. The right to settle disputes when they arise, either in contractual arrangements or market arrangements, is very important because you want to be able to settle things peacefully and not have to go and shoot it out over those things. Those kinds of things, and maybe a general safety net so that if there's an emergency and nobody knows about it or something like that, that there's some help, and a general overall insurance that people are not poisoned in the market, although the market will take care of that very quickly. I mean, we see that even in drug trades on the street. When there's bad heroin on the street, everybody in the neighborhood knows. And so they know not to buy from that dealer or in that neighborhood. So word gets out very quickly, but I think it's justifiable to have something like that in a general sense.
So finally, if you would, what the popular conception is that the engine that drives capitalism is greed. You say, not necessarily.
Yeah, I want to emphasize that. Not necessarily. Certainly there are some people who are very greedy, and they get involved in capitalism. But let's remember what greed is. Greed isn't just economics, right? Greed is power. Greed is disordered desire. So that clergy might be greedy, not necessarily for money, but for position, for power. When people play politics, when you're greedy for status, when you're greedy for the opinions of others, and when you're greedy for money. So I think we have to remember that what the market is people bringing various values into interaction in society. And when they bring those values, those might be good values and those might be bad values. The worst thing, however, is to have the same reality expressed through the state. You know, people seem to think that somehow bureaucrats and politicians are immaculately conceived without the stain of original sin. I've got news for you, they're not. They're just like the rest of us. So I'd rather have a competitive system where at least good can compete with evil than to have evil overwhelm a system and, in effect, socialize it.
Father Robert Sirico is co-founder of the Acton Institute for the Study of Religion and Liberty, based in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He's author of the new book, Defending the Free Market, The Moral Case for a Free Economy. You can find out more about this book and the Acton Institute at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Father Sirico, thank you very much.
Great to be with you, Todd. Thank you.